I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down the way of life while fighting and falling down the deep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They don't know our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me, running down the way of life. If you don't love it, leave it. This song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life by fighting and falling down the deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. So much to report. We constantly seem to be finding... I'm a little bit behind on some of the stories we really should be talking about every day. Here is kind of a bit ashamed of this company. Of course, once Canada legalized marijuana, we started having a lot of companies that grew marijuana and marketing it and so on. It created a huge boom in that aspect of the stock market last year. A lot of that has come off, not just actually well before the recent what's going on right now in the reaction to coronavirus, etc. I was rather disappointed in this. Probably the biggest marijuana producer in Canada is called Canopy Growth Corporation. It has a number of operations, greenhouse operations that grow marijuana, and this is what particularly concerned me. Under the guidance of former CEO Bruce Linton, Canopy had purchased a the Niagara Peninsula property for $9 million in September 2017. 6 months later, the company spent $400 million to purchase the BC, that's British Columbia, greenhouses in Delta and Aldergrove. These are suburbs of Vancouver. hiring hundreds of workers, mostly new immigrants and temporary foreign workers. I intend to go to the shareholders meeting later this year, and I'm going to be asking about that, especially the temporary foreign workers. You see, that this is a way to undercut Canadian labor. It's getting labor on the cheap. Well, that, at a time of considerable unemployment, you know, frankly, that just isn't right. It isn't. It should not be allowed. In fact, it actually isn't allowed. Well, it isn't. It isn't. It's not allowed, but it happens. You see, in order to get the, in order to get permission to bring in temporary foreign workers, the company has to assert that it has tried to get Canadian workers. Now you wonder, what, with a, you know, fairly considerable unemployment rate, how could that be? And also, of course, this would not be particularly skilled labor. You know, it's greenhouse work, raising marijuana plants. It doesn't require, you know, a PhD in agronomy. So how do they pull it off? I'm not sure, but it stinks. Probably, of course, what they want is labor as cheap as possible. Well, yes, that's an understandable goal, but in a civilized, advanced society, we don't allow you to hire a person for 10 cents an hour, or 2 cents an hour, or even $2 an hour, even though you probably could get people to work for that in some third world countries like the Philippines. And this companies have just delighted in programs like the temporary foreign workers. At one point, we had almost 500,000 of them in the country. And it's a lie to say, well, they're doing jobs Canadians won't do. No, they're doing jobs Canadians should have, or they're doing jobs at a pay rate that Canadians will not accept. And that's not the same thing as jobs Canadians will not do. I'm disappointed in them. Now, I know others may have other reasons for being disappointed, but that's certainly my biggest reason. It's something I intend to do something about. And I urge people, especially some of you that are older and you may have stock portfolios, to use some of that power you have for the cause. And what I mean by that is, one of the rights you have as a shareholder is to go to the annual meeting. And, you know, that's one time when these people are a little bit vulnerable. I should say that the managers of the company. I'll explain why. They're vulnerable because you get the right to ask a question. As a shareholder, you've got a right to, at the suitable time during the meeting, to stick up your hand and ask a question. And they're always worried about that because you never know what's going to happen. I've been to a lot of shareholders' meetings, and you know, most of them are fairly boring affairs, and the company wants to rush through the business as fast as possible. The CEO or the president gives a short speech about how everything's great and so on, and often it's enough to make an alligator puke full of, you know, all these silly platitudes that our business is sustainable. I'll just scratch my head to say, well, what does that mean? Sustainable will mean last forever? but, you know, it's full of slogans and so on. But anyway, most annual meetings also give you a meal. A snack. So some actually give you a meal. I have a favorite annual meeting I go to that they provide you with just an amazing buffet of really good stuff to go with the company product, which just happens to be, you guessed it, wine. Anyway, the annual meeting is a time when, because of the laws of the land, the directors are the board of directors are vulnerable, at least vulnerable to a appointed question. They might be able to avoid the media much of the time. Or shovel out non-answers, and I'm not saying that they, you know, that they necessarily give you the best answer at a annual shareholders meeting, but it is an opportunity. It's also an opportunity to put something on the agenda as somebody with a stake in the company. Now, you may only have 10 shares. Now, you don't have to be a multimillionaire. In fact, on the strength of one share, you get the right as a shareholder to attend the annual meeting. And I strongly suggest, if you're a shareholder in companies in the United States or Canada, and obviously, if you're in the U.S., it's probably difficult to come up to a shareholders meeting in Canada and vice versa, but sometimes we don't realize the power we have. And of course, our enemies would like us to feel constantly discouraged. Oh, there's nothing I can do about it. It's hopeless. Or, you know, the old saying, you can't fight City Hall. Well, here's, this is so typical of the utterly degenerate, broken German political system. Leftist wins post after far-right scandal. Wow, okay, what's happening here? Lawmakers in Germany's eastern state of Thuringia voted a former hard-left state premier back into office on Wednesday, replacing a liberal whose election a month ago with far-right backing sent shockwaves through the political establishment. On February 5th, Thomas Kemperich became the first state premier elected with the support of the far-right Alternative for Deutschland, for Germany, or the Alternative for Deutschland. Now, that is, of course, the designation by, who put this? Reuters. They're far right. Well, you know, that's meant to be negative. What are they? Well, they're by no means the most nationalist or conservative of the German political parties. But they did make a big breakthrough in the last federal election. They elected, I think they're the third largest party in the Bundestag, that's the national parliament. And they have, I believe, 93 or so elected members, deputies or members of parliament. Okay, well, but a far right, well, what constitutes that? Well, they're strongly opposed to the massive third world immigration that has occurred in Germany. I mean, most people would say that's kind of common sense. The German media, which is almost as poisonous as much of the North American media, frequently will refer to them as a Rechtsradikal, or the radical right. Take the story a little bit further. The February 5th result shattered the post-war consensus among established parties of shunning the far right, and led CDU leader Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer to abandon her ambition of succeeding Angela Merkel as Germany's next chancellor. You might say, well, that hardly seems to be any connection. Kemmerich of the Liberal Free Democrats, they're kind of a libertarian, free market sort of party, said a day after his election that his position was untenable and subsequently quit, paving the way for a new election. So he became temporarily the, because it had to be a coalition, no party had an absolute majority. So he was voted premier through a coalition of his party and the Alternative for Germany. Well, the two big parties in Germany, the socialists, or they call themselves social democrats, or Conservative Democratic Union, that's Angela Merkel's party, have traditionally refuse, even in coalition situations, to join in coalition with any of the several nationalist parties which have from time to time elected members, and in this case the Alternative for Germany or the ADF elected a lot of members to the state house, and this is the state of Thuringia. Okay, so for whatever reason, the coalition lasted all 5 days, and then I guess there was so much pressure brought to bear on this fellow Kemmerich that he stepped down. Wednesday's vote saw Rodo Ramelow of the far-left Link, backed by the centre-left Social Democrats and the Greens, reinstalled as premier after a third round of voting in secret ballots. And the only way that came about was the following. Ramelow failed to secure a majority in the first two rounds against the AFD candidate, who was described as a far-right firebrand. In other words, a good speaker, Bjorn Hoke. In the third round, Hoke withdrew his candidacy and Ramelow ran alone, winning 82 of 85 votes, the same level of support he garnered in the first two rounds, suggesting his victory came without the support of either the Alternative for Germany, the AFD, or the CDU. So, actually, by withdrawing as candidate, for God knows what reason, the AFD candidate, it became an acclamation. Pathetic, but and what particularly bothers me is this refusal on the part of the major parties to behave democratically. That is, to work in a coalition with nationalist parties, particularly the AFD. They simply don't play by the democratic rules. Oh yes, and the newly elected far left premier refused to shake the hands of the AFD state leader when he put out his hand to congratulate him. These people are really psychopaths. I had been kind of remiss about an important date, and this has to do with the significance of today, and that is March the 5th. And March the 5th is the anniversary of the Alamo, and a person I've admired for many years, Chuck Baldwin, wrote a very, very good column about that, entitled Remembering the Alamo. I'm sorry, it's tomorrow, March 6th. Tomorrow, March 6th, I'm recording this show on March 6th, so marks the anniversary of the fall of the Alamo outside of San Antonio in Texas, of course, back in 1836. This event is so significant in my mind that I will always try to devote a column that honors the heroism of these men on or about the anniversary of the occasion. For 13 days, 189 brave and determined patriots withstood Santa Anna's seasoned army of over 4,000 troops. That was General Santa Anna, the Mexican, well, actually, Spanish or Mexican, I think, in those days. You'd say, well, they're Spanish. Well, I think the Mexicans had already gained independence from Spain. But, okay. And he was a small man with a huge ego, and had even styled himself as the Napoleon of the New World. Well, of course, he might be able to claim a victory at the Alamo at San Antonio, but within a couple of months, his army was in tatters and had been roundly beaten by very angry American patriots. To a man, the defenders of that mission fort knew that they would never leave those ramparts alive. They had several opportunities to leave and live, yet they chose to fight and die. How foolish they must look to this generation of spoiled Americans. It's difficult to recall the lion-hearted men such as Davy Crockett, a nationally renowned frontiersman and former U.S. congressman at the time, Will Travis, only 26 years old with two small children at home, Jim Bowie, a wealthy landowner with properties on both sides of the Rio Grande, and Almiron Dickinson, a 36-year-old blacksmith and artillery captain, who was one of the very last men to die at the Alamo, and whose young wife and daughter were two of only three Alamo survivors. Chuck makes it says it's hard to believe that such brave men really existed. These were real men with real dreams and real desires. Real blood flowed through their veins. They loved their families and enjoyed life as much as any of us do. However, there was something different about them. They possessed a commitment to liberty that transcended personal safety and comfort. And the point Chuck Baldwin is making, it's a pretty profound one, is that there are not a lot of people today who feel that way. Freedom's an easy word to say, but it's a hard word to live up to. Freedom involves much more than financial gain or personal pleasure. Accompanying freedom is her constant and unattractive companion, responsibility. Neither is she an only child. Courage and honesty are her sisters. They're inseparable. Destroy one and all will die. And, you know, those of us who are in the freedom movement, I think we realize that every day, and we often have to, I think, search our own consciences. It's easy to say, I'm for freedom. It's sometimes in a very unfree world, with demonic forces wanting to destroy freedom, it's sometimes not all that easy to fight for it. Early in the siege, Travis wrote these words to the people of Texas. Fellow citizens and compatriots, I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Ana. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat, victory or death. P.S. The Lord is on our side. As you read those words, remember that Travis and the others did not have the National Education Association telling them how intolerant and narrow-minded their notion of honor and patriotism was. They didn't have the Southern Poverty Law Center telling them that they were a hate group. A hostile media did not constantly castigate them as a bunch of wild-eyed extremists. As schoolchildren, they were not taught that their forefathers were nothing more than racist jerks. The TSA didn't have them on a terrorist watch. Neither did they have a 501c3 pastor constantly filling their hearts and minds with imbecilic, obey the government no matter what, misinterpretation of Romans chapter 13. The brave men at the Alamo labored under the belief that America and Texas really was the land of the free and the home of the brave. They believed in God and their cause was just. They also believed that the freedom of future generations depended on their courage and resolve. They further believed their posterity would remember their sacrifice as an act of love and devotion. It all looks pale now. By today's standards, the gallant men of the Alamo appear rather foolish. After all, they had no chance of winning, none. Yet yet the call for pragmatism, remember, anytime the media wants to signal good guy, they say he's a moderate, or he's a pragmatic, he's a pragmatic politician, which means he'll sell you out so fast. anyway, remember those courageous champions of the Alamo did not fight and die for a political party or some lesser of two evils mantra. They fought and died for a cause, and that cause was liberty and independence. One thing is certain. Those 189 defenders of the Alamo joined the ranks of the world's greatest freedom fighters, patriots such as the 70 Minutemen, most of whom were congregants of Pastor Jonas Clark's church at Lexington, who stood against 800 British troops in the pre-dawn hours of April the 19th, 1775 at Lexington Green, and hundreds more who joined them at Concord Bridge a few hours later. I'm talking of all men such as the great freedom fighter William Wallace and his band of 7,000 stout-hearted Scots who stood against a force of 18,000 well-trained British soldiers at the Battle of Stirling Bridge on September 11th, 1297, and again on July 22nd, 1298, when Wallace and 5,000 Scots went up against an English force of over 15,000 soldiers at the Battle of Falkirk. And let's not forget the single greatest example of men who chose to fight for liberty against the greatest of odds, the 300 Spartans, who squared off against more than 100,000 Persians at the Battle of Thermopylae in August or September 480 BC. And the, yes, they're tremendous fighters and tremendous courage, but they were able to, you know, you'd say, well, how could they possibly do this? Well, they were able to secure a pass. And so they were able to force the Persians to come at them across a small line rather than, you know, across an open field where they perhaps could be simply surrounded. These stories, and hundreds like them, are the heritage of free men everywhere. And the willingness to stand against overwhelming odds for the cause of liberty is certainly America's heritage. At the same time, it's extremely important to note that the Alamo defenders and the rest of the honorable men mentioned above did not act as a mob. They acted in accordance with the natural laws of God, and thus their resistance was just and righteous. I heard a pastor recently say, "I can find no justification in the scriptures for America's war for independence." I hope many of his congregants found no justification for staying under his spiritual leadership after hearing that egregiously erroneous exposition. And I hope they ceased funding the fool. The only reason the pastor could say such a thing is because he has totally ignored numerous biblical references and is totally ignorant of biblical natural law. Either that, or he is a desperately deceived monarchist statist. Sadly, I would guess that a huge percentage of America's pastors today actually shared this misguided pastor sentiment. Why don't you ask your pastor what he thinks this Sunday? The heroes of the Alamo, as well as the heroes of America's fight for independence, acted bravely and in good conscience under the moral laws of God and the just laws of nature. In the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies," those are the 13 colonies, "and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government." John Locke, the father of America's founding fathers, said, "If a long train of abuses, prevarications, and artifices, all tending in the same way, make the design visible to the people, and they cannot but feel what they lie under, and see whither they are going, it is not to be wondered that they should then rouse themselves and endeavor to put the rule into such hands which may secure to them the ends for which government was created." Locke continued, "Whoever uses force without right, everyone does in society, who does it without law, puts himself into a state of war with those against whom he so uses it. And in that state, all former ties are cancelled, all other rights cease, and everyone has a right to defend himself and to resist the aggressor. In line with the law of conscience, for those who advance that civil society's rules must be abandoned and armed resistance taken, thus putting society in a state of war, there is a standard of proof that must be met, so as to convince the people that the actions taken outside the rules of established law are justified. This is what our fathers did when they penned the Declaration of Independence. The founders of the Republic of Texas did likewise." He's included the Declaration of the People of Texas and the Texas Declaration of Independence among the freedom documents. Pretty powerful. And in honor of the March 6th being the Alamo, I'm going to play Marty Wadlin's Ballad of the Alamo. It has some really gripping lines in it. This is Marty Robbins, and this is the Ballad of the Alamo.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruin that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometime between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as they answer to their roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis, Davy Crockett, and 180 more, Captain Dickinson, Jim Bowie, present and accounted for. Back in 1836, Houston said to Travis, get some volunteers and go and fortify the Alamo. Well, the men came from Texas and from old Tennessee, and they joined up with Travis just to fight for the right to be free. Indian scouts with squirrel guns, men with muzzle loaders, stood together heel and toe to defend the Alamo. You may ne'er see your loved ones, Travis told them that day. Those who untrue can leave now, those who fight to the death let them stay. In the sand he drew a line with his army saber. Out of 185, not a soldier crossed the line. With his banners a-dancing in the dawn's golden light, Santa Anna came prancing on a horse that was black as the night. Sent an officer to tell Travis to surrender. Travis answered with a shell and a rousing rebel yell. Santa Anna turned scarlet, played to play low, he roared, I will show them no quarter, everyone will be put to the sword. 185, holding back 5,000. 5 days, 6 days, 8 days, 10. Travis held and held again. Then he sent for replacements for his wounded and lame. But the troops that were coming never came, never came, never came. Twice he charged, then blew recall on the fatal third time. Santa Anna breached the wall and he killed them one and all. Now the bugles are silent and there's rust on each sword, and the small band of soldiers lie asleep in the arms of the Lord. In the southern part of Texas, near the town of San Antonio, like a statue on his pintle rides a cowboy all alone. And he sees the cattle grazing where a century before Santa Anna's guns were blazing and the cannons used to roar. And his eyes turn sort of misty and his heart begins to glow, and he takes his hat off slowly to the men of Alamo, to the 13 days of glory at the Siege of Alamo.
That's a ballad by Marty Robbins, the Ballad of the Alamo, and just trying to collect this here. And there's another song about the Alamo. Which I think is even more inspirational, which I'm going to try to play for you now. This is Johnny Cash's song, Remember the Alamo. And
challenged by Travis to die. By the line that he drew with his sword when the battle was nigh. Any man that will fight to the death cross over, but if you want to live, you better fly. And over the line Seventh in my freedom, a man more than willing to die. Hey, Santiago, we're killing your soldiers below. That men, wherever they go, will remember the Alamo. They said a young scout from the battlements bloody and loud, with words of farewell from a garrison valiant and proud. Grieve not, little darling, my dying. If Texas is sovereign and free, we'll never surrender and ever with liberty be.
That's a great song. Remember the Alamo. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on lightresistanceradio.com. I want to play a talk by Laurel, my good friend Laurel Lynn Tyler Thompson. Now, Laurel Lynn appeared with me on Sunday the 23rd in Vancouver at a cafe meeting, and I was the main speaker, but because she had to go, I had her speak part way through, and she has a very interesting story about what happened or her involvement with a British Columbia father who is being massively abused by the criminal justice system, which is imposing, stripping parents of their rights, and imposing the radical transgender agenda on British Columbia and parents. And I'm going
to
try.
I'm fit to be tied. I am fighting this. They hauled me into court. Now they're going to have to deal with me. So we are going to get constitutional lawyers involved here. We are going to get medical malpractice lawyers involved. We are going to stand up for this father. I am 100% behind him. I understand why he finally went public. He's probably going to end up in jail because he's decided at this point he's not going to be silent. And you know what? I'm going to visit him and I'm going to support him. And we're going to figure out how Canada can be so pathetic that gender fluid theory is being taught through all the schools without parental notification or awareness for the most part, and without our consent. This goes...
Okay, that's just a teaser. And I'm going to try to pick up the main part of her speech. This was on... Sunday the 23rd of February in Vancouver. It's Laurel Lynn Tyler Thompson. Laurel Lynn was a...
constitutional lawyer.
Laurel Lynn is a federal candidate for the People's Party of Canada in a by-election last year. think I will.
Anyway, you know the story there. A story that is cancel culture on steroids. Laura Lynn Tyler folks.
Paul, thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you for all you do to notify Canadians of what serious trouble we are in that a lot of people don't know we're in. I've experienced many of the things that Paul was talking about, losing my job for standing against Soji, having an extreme, the anti-bullying crowd were very bullying, and so they went after me. They called my work incessantly, lighting up the telephone board, and they called CRTC, Joy TV, Vision TV, and they called all the advertisers for the networks that I was on. And wanted me gone forever from the airwaves. Why? Because I stood against gender fluid theory being taught to little kids. So 2.5 years later, what's happened recently is that a man has a great offense, and he's very upset because his daughter transitioned to be a boy without his parental consent. And the courts have ordered that that was okay. Not only have they ordered that this young minor who cannot get a tattoo and who cannot drink a glass of wine, get married, make any big decisions, can't drive, this young minor was able to decide that she would begin taking testosterone. She's growing a beard now, and she's, you know, probably sterile, is what they say. So he's very upset about it. And so he was going through the normal court processes to try to get it stopped, to do everything that he could and to stand against what was happening, and nothing worked. In fact, Justice Mazzari, she is a LGBTQ activist judge. So our courts are full of activist judges. So Justice Mazzari orders that this father will be guilty of, at first she said, now this is either the Bowden order or Mazzari, that he would be guilty of family violence if he misgenders his daughter, and that if he spoke publicly about this situation or privately, that he would be subject to arrest without warrant. So that was an order made against this father.
Now,
so can you imagine? Yeah, right. Feels like it should be in North Korea. So the dad, of course, was very upset about this. He's not even allowed to speak privately. Can you imagine? So you can't talk privately to your best friend, to, you know, to somebody. So they eventually removed that, and they said that, well, you can talk privately. All right, that's fine. But there is a court order that he must refer to his daughter as his son. He must use male pronouns. And so all of that came to a head just about a week and a half ago or so, when he decided he was breaking the silence. He was not going to just speak privately. He was going to speak publicly about the terrible thing that had happened, that the school had hidden that his daughter was taking on a different name, even putting her into the yearbook under a different name without notifying the parents. So when he began to realize this was a problem, then he went off to a doctor. Well, we have a Frankenstein doctor who is transitioning 500 kids in the Children of Family, at Ministry of Children and Families here in BC. He bragged about that. He brags about his youngest client being 3 years old. He has another 500 on top of that of transitioning kids. Now, when I was growing up, I didn't know anyone who was transitioning. Now, in a school, you've got anywhere from 10 to 12 that are, you know, gender dysphoric, and it's all the fad. Used to be we would be a punk rocker, right? We would do something to really annoy our parents by, you know, maybe we'd grow long hair, get a tattoo, sneak that in. We'd do something crazy, you know? But now, being transgender is the new fad. And so we have a social contagion going on. So this dad decides that he wants to come out with that. He does an interview with a good friend of mine, Frank Vaughn, over in Ontario. I said, awesome interview, can I interview you as well? Sure, he said. Now, I understood the court orders, and I knew that this was maybe gonna get us in a little bit of, you know, I didn't know what was gonna happen. What are they gonna do, you know? I know that when I looked after underage youth, and they would go out and rob a convenience store, they would be in jail overnight and they'd be out and it would be a slap on the wrist and court would be months and months down the road. So I figured, well, you know, whatever. I'm just telling a story that needs to be told. So so I interviewed the father and we had a really wonderful interview. It's now gone worldwide. They've downloaded it in Australia, Germany, the UK, USA. It is unstoppable. It is like seeds that are spreading out. They are not going to be able to stop it. So I was hauled into court. So what they did was they hauled me into court and a fellow named Jen Smith. So for any of you who know this guy named Jen Smith, he wears dresses and lipstick and he's a trans-identified man. But he's not under any illusions that he's a woman, like Morgan Oger, who thinks he's a woman, and he's not. I told Morgan to his face that unless you have fallopian tubes, you're not a woman. So until he has that operation, I will not call him a she. So I end up in front of the judge. We've been there now two times. So the court has ordered that I was to take down all of my videos. So when I saw that it's gone viral, that Mass Resistance has it up, Activist Mummy has it up, these different organizations, the Federalist has it up, then why should I keep it up? Why should I have any penalty against me? I said, sure, 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 I'll take it down, but it's everywhere. So then the judge wants me to police my media accounts, my social media. So if any of you were to take the Federalist link and put it up on my social media, then I am responsible and I have to police it nonstop. So you can see that right now I'm busy. I am speaking at an event with my friend Paul Frum, and I am sharing what is going on in Canada, and I might not be monitoring my Facebook account. I might not be on my Twitter or YouTube accounts, right? Instagram, whatever. So it's very, I feel it's very onerous to say that we have to, you know, be constantly monitoring. I did bring this up to the judge. So I'd just like to say that our judge is Justice Taman. I find him to be very fair. He's not an activist judge. He is not peddling the LGBTQ dogma or agenda. So I appreciate that about him. He is also bound by orders that have already been made by the LGBTQ activists. So we're dealing with a whole new framework. So I put up a GoFundMe page. I am raising funds. So we're in court March 9th, and we're gonna see if any of us have gone against the court orders and looking for contempt charges by March 9th if any of us have disobeyed. So if I, maybe I'll be found in contempt when a whole bunch of, you know, 30 or 40 people suddenly put the Federalist page. Maybe they want me to be in contempt. Maybe my enemies want me to be in contempt, so they hide these links all over the place. That's something I could be facing, right? And then there's also that you know, my friends, we are all rebelling because free speech in Canada should be a given. Freedom of the press, freedom to tell your story. Why are we hiding that these doctors, okay, this young person who has been transitioned had a crush on two male teachers? What does that say about her? She has heterosexual tendencies, right? Isn't that natural? You know, you're kind of in love with your teacher in high school, if they're cute. I didn't really have cute ones, but anyways. So if you're in love with your male teacher, you have heterosexual tendencies, but what did they do? The doctor in question here told the father that, well, she's gay. So we're gonna turn her into a boy and he's gonna be he, and then he's gonna have gay relationships. This is a doctor who's transitioning 1,000 kids. Then they go to, he refers them to Children's Hospital. At Children's Hospital, what we know is that within 2 hours, the doctor there offered this girl testosterone. They kind of freaked out. The mom called the dad and they're separated, you know, so they're working through all that, but they were like both like, yeah, let's not do this today. How does Children's Hospital offer a child they do not know who has heterosexual tendencies, who's 14, testosterone within 2 hours? I am fit to be tied. I am fighting this. They hauled me into court. Now they're going to have to deal with me. So we are going to get constitutional lawyers involved here. We are going to get medical malpractice lawyers involved. We are going to stand up for this father. I am 100% behind him. I understand why he finally went public. He's probably going to end up in jail because he's decided at this point he's not going to be silent. And you know what? I'm going to visit him and I'm going to support him. And we're going to figure out how Canada can be so pathetic that gender fluid theory is being taught through all the schools without parental notification or awareness for the most part, and without our consent. This goes against religious beliefs. This goes against atheist beliefs, where they don't want their kid told that their parts are not the right parts. Stop it. Everybody can have some confusion while you're growing up. So I find myself at a most pivotal part. We were just in court on Friday, and it was a 1-hour application, and it went from 9 a.m. till 5. This is gonna blow sky high. Do you know why? Because the rest of the world's picking it up. The rest of the world says there has been an injustice here. They're on the dad's side. And I let Justice Taman know, I said, sir, this is going to be much bigger than you think. Our courtroom was so crowded. I invite you to come on March 9th. If any of you just want to see an interesting court case, you just show up, right, Brian? And it was so full. We had to be moved to a different courtroom after lunch because so many people came that want to support. This is a mess, and we need to stand up for the kids and for the children. So I'm right in the middle of that. They've always wanted to cancel us, but somehow we were so loud and so noisy, and when they told me to take down my interview, I wouldn't do it. I just let it sit there. They haul me into court. I said, fine. So we go to court. And so now I'm on record with Jen Smith, the trans activist, who said he was going to do the whole story in an interview with the father. And I'm on record with all of them, and we're all in trouble together, and we're all standing together. And I don't care what this costs me, what they have done with this gender fluid theory being put into all the schools, and this is worldwide, right? All of a sudden the UN, it's really, the UN has this global agenda to transgenderify the entire world, and it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And we have tremendous compassion for all children who suffer. Gender dysphoria is a real, very, very difficult thing for a kid, but there's such a low percentage, you know, it's 0.03% of the population that would be transgender. But when you take 500 ministry kids, that actually adds up to 7-point-something% of the population of ministry kids. So this doctor, I like to call him Dr. Frankenstein, because I'm not allowed to say his real name right now, but his name's coming out, and I am talking about him in other ways on my Facebook page. So if you want more information about who that is, it won't take you long to find out. Because we have got to stand, and we've been very silent. We're very polite as Canadians, and I understand that. But when it comes to the protection of our youth, it's time to stand. And so I appreciate all that you do, Paul, to bring common sense to Canadians. And I'm very glad to be here to share my story. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter, Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson, and you can find my videos on YouTube. I'm pretty much posting once a day now because there's so many things going on. I get tons of letters. They are screenshotting everything I do. And wouldn't you know, going to the point that this gentleman made, I wake up today, I live in a condo, and my internet is gone. I have no cable, no phone, and no internet. Just us. Isn't that interesting?
It's a coincidence,
I guess. How unfortunate for us when we're uploading so many things every day. Oh, well, we'll get it fixed. They have a technician coming tomorrow. And so thank you very much. Thank you for everything. I will have to leave because my mom and dad are celebrating their 56th wedding anniversary. And it's going on.
That was Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson. This is Paul Fromm. I'm going to take, of course, a very short musical break tonight, and let's play some one or two Ulster Scots tunes. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on Alt Right TV.
Thank you.
I'm back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe, the dauntless hero, came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave, our boast, our pride, and joined in love together. The thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot, and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.